Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, and we are at the Halakha Mishnah on Daf Samach Gimel. So we're continuing to discuss the issue of Hotzah with various things that are not quite Begadim, and we're talking about Tachshitim and useful items that are part of your appearance, the way you present yourself and relate to the world. What about weapons? So the question is, if you're carrying a weapon or you're carrying a defensive item, you're wearing armor, what would be the status of those things vis-a-vis Hotzah on Shabbos? And this is what obviously we're talking about over here, one of the most fundamental aspects of a human relationship to the world around him. And here is the interesting question. Do we look at the essential nature of humanity, or do we look at the evolutionary nature of humanity? So in other words, in terms of, we've been going back to Gan Eden to understand Beged. In Gan Eden, the concept of milchama is nonsensical, because what we're looking at in Gan Eden is the end of the process, not the beginning of the process. Because what Gan Eden really represents is where we end up getting to. However, since Gan Eden launches us on this journey that we're in the middle of Kulay Milchama, and this Milchama takes place on different levels. It's a Milchama that takes place literally in terms of competition in war that allows Klal Yisrael to survive. It's competition in general in terms of success in our relationship to others who are less fortunate. And it's great Milchama, of course, is the development of our mind and consciousness, which is the curious interrelationship of humanity as it is meant to be and humanity in the process of development. And it's because of that that learning Torah is considered to be a war. It's milchamta shel Torah. However, it is a war that is engaged in out of mutual love. And because of that, the Gemara is going to actually bring up all of these different levels of milchama, including what appears on the surface to have nothing to do with the issues we're talking about, learning Torah Lishma, the way in which two people learn together. What do you do when you don't have a Rebbe and you need to learn with a friend? What in the world does this have to do with Shabbos? Everything. So it's all part of exactly the same issues. And of course, ultimately comes to discuss what is the nature of these inyanim when it is not wartime, that is to say, not Olam Hazeh, but rather you're back in Gan Eden. So what would be the din of these inyanim in the process world in which we live? So, introduces the Mishnah, lo yetzei ha'ish, lo besayev, velo bekeshet, velo betris. If you're going out on Shabbos, you should not be wearing a sword or a bow or a shield or an alah, which we don't know what that is right now, but we're going to be explaining it in the Gemara later on, to be like a mace, or with a spear. But im yatsa, if you went out, you would actually be chayev achatas, because these are not clothes. These are useful weapons. And because of that, you would be chayev, because you're carrying a weapon. Says Rabbi Eliezer, no, that's not true. They're useful, but they're useful takshitim, so that doesn't make them carrying. That makes them something that they make you look good. When you're carrying a sword, you look great. You're carrying a weapon. You're carrying a gun. That's part of your takshitim. Whereas the Chachamim say, takshitim? What, are you crazy? You don't decorate yourself with the horrors of life in a process of competition. It's a gnai. It's an absolute disgrace that we need to be this. Because if they were really takshitim, so then can you explain to me why it would be that the Navi, in describing a better world, so what is Yeshayo, the famous words on the United Nations, right? I mean, this is supposed to describe the way that people interrelate, you know, they shall beat their swords into plowshares, et cetera, as everybody. I think it's actually, they have it in Hebrew as well in front of the UN. I'm not sure. I don't remember, actually. But anyway, so it says, so their spears will turn into gardening shears. You know, that's a nice use for these kind of sharp blades. So you can have your pretty gardens back in Gan Eden. Lo yisa goy el goy cherev, lo yinadu od milchama. So the Navi is describing a world in which these things will no longer be useful. So then, if they were such decorative things, why would they suddenly disappear in a better world? Then the Mishnah continues with a sugya that we mentioned briefly earlier. Birit, which turns out to be a garter belt, is tahar because it's a kli that's mishamish stocking, so it's a kli that's mishamish other kelim, and that's not considered to be a kli maaseh to be mekabel tuma. And you can even go out with it on Shabbos because obviously you need to hold up your stockings. And there's no chashash that the woman is going to take it off to show a friend. First of all, there's nothing really very pretty about a garter belt. And if she would take it off, her stockings would fall, and she doesn't want that to happen. Kivalim, on the other hand, are tmeim because they are direct shimush that we're going to ask in the Gemara what exactly are kivalim. And it sounds like cables or chains of some kind, but you're not allowed to go with them on Shabbos because apparently you could take them off and show. So now let's go back to the Mishnah and understand what is an Allah. All the other things I know. An Allah is a kulpa. And a kulpa, which we spoke about actually, this type of thing in Kalim, when we were learning the Mishnah. So that's a club, but it's a club that's got this big ball at the end. So it's essentially a mace. We talked over there about the nails. You put nails in the mace to make it more deadly. That was back in Kalim as well. If they're takshitim himlo, so explain why it is that when Mashiach comes and the Navi's talking about what's going to happen, when the world finally figures out what's supposed to be, why are they all batal? Amalan, what do you mean, why are they all batal? They're batal because you don't need them. But that, why would that mean that while you need them, that they're not considered to be? We had the same exact issue introduced yesterday. So if you have something that's very pretty and decorative, but its purpose is to give out a good smell to cover body odor, and if you don't have that, the ingredients inside, they're just as decorative, but they're no longer meaningful. You can't wear a broken watch and say, well, I'm wearing it because it's a bracelet. It's a broken watch. The same thing is true. Liatid lavo, what are you wearing these things for when they no longer serve the purpose for which they were made? So now they cease to be a meaningful decoration. That's why. But it doesn't mean that currently they're not decorative. Because in the end, that's what the pasuk is saying. Lo yisa goyel goy cherev. If people are not going to be fighting, then you don't need to have these wherewithals for fighting. Well, still, I mean, you're saying they're pretty. Why can't you wear them not to fight? Omer Rabbi, what kind of kasha is that? You could have a beautiful flashlight, right? Okay, so now you're walking around with a beautiful flashlight. And now it's the middle of the afternoon, and you look like a total idiot. Why are you walking around with a flashlight in the middle of the afternoon? It's the same exact thing. I mean, something that was perfectly useful might have been awfully show-offy if you were wearing it at night, but and now it's like Midadavi Ashraga Batira. You're carrying around a lamp in the middle of the day. It's ridiculous. Now, this whole idea in which the Braisa is saying that when Mashiach comes, it is no longer going to be necessary to use weapons, that entire assumption is actually a big mistake, according to Shmuel, which is the way that the Rambam actually speaks about La Halacha, Upliga de Shmuel, because Shmuel says, listen, there's nothing seriously, these are all metaphors. There's no real difference between Olam Hazeh, the way we live now, and Yemot HaMashiach. The only fundamental difference is the question of whether you're subject to the Goyim, or whether you're free, that's all. But as far as what nature's not going to change, economy doesn't change, pizza parlors don't change, nothing changes. So all of this is really, Tosu says, what do you mean? But there's a base on Megiddash. Yeah, obviously it doesn't mean every last detail, but that's included in the idea of the Shibud Golios and so on. That's what it means to be free. Shenemar, because look, it says, Ki lo yechdal evyon mikar v'aretz. The time is not going to come when there are not going to be any poor that you're going to have to take care of. So that means that as long as the mitzvah satayra negea, which is all of Olam Hazeh, including Yemos HaMashiach, you're going to be giving tzedakah. Misayei alei l'Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. But it does prove that Rabbi Chiya bar Abba's approach. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba's approach was, on the contrary, that all of the glorious descriptions of the Nevi'im are only nogea Yemot HaMashiach, and they never even attempted to give any type of insight or even metaphorical insight to Olam Haba, because they could all they could do is diminish it in the eye of your imagination by using metaphors. And over there it says, Ayin lo ra'ata Elohim zulatecha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu only is the one who has any sense of Ya'aseh Mechakelo, those who await him in Olam Haba. V'di ikedi amri. Now, there's another way that the Brisa reads. Ikedi amri. It goes like this. Omrulo l'Reb Eliezer. If these are takshitim, why are they batel l'imot HaMashiach? The same question that we asked. And in this Brisa, the way that our version now reads, is that he answered them, what makes you think that they will be batel? They won't be batel. Af l'imot HaMashiach. And all of this stuff is just metaphorical stuff. And Hainu de Shmuel, that is exactly what Shmuel says, that there is no difference between Olam Hazeh and Yemot HaMashiach. And this is the opposite of Reb Chiya Bar Ava, according to which the Mishnah, the Braita, is actually supporting Shmuel. Omele Abaya l'Rav Dimi, v'amele l'Rav Avya, or some say it was Rav Yosef who said to Rav Dimi, or maybe to Rav Avya, or some say actually it was Abaya who said to Rav Yosef, who, but anyway, whoever said it, whoever said it, and remember, Kol Omer Dover B'Shem Omro, maybe Gu'ula L'Olam, so that's what we're being icing in. So he said, why does Reb Eliezer assume that because they are useful in this way, that we would view them as something that actually is ornamental? I mean, to say that something like a weapon is ornamental because of the way that it changes your presentation and a manifestation in the world would assume that the competitive nature of a human being is part of his actual expression of self. Is that true? Where does he know that from? He knows it because it says so beferish in a pasuk, a beautiful pasuk. Chagor charbechal yarech gibor. So, gird your sword on your thigh, you hero. It is your glory and your beauty. So, I mean, your glory and your beauty. In other words, you're supposed to express yourself with these weapons. I don't understand. Everybody knows that that pasuk is speaking about, remember, it starts off with the words, Yafita mibnei Adam, you're the most beautiful of humans that I ever met. That's talking about Talmidei Chachamim and their love for each other. So when it says, gird your sword, it means make sure that you've got Shas in your pocket, so to speak. And make sure that you've got the Rambam on your other and you're ready to fight. Again, here we see the transition of the concept of Muhammad into Torah directly, which is part of the entire idea of the competitive aspect, which we're going to get into, because here we're talking about Milchamta Shel Torah. So bring along your weapons, you beautiful hero. That's your glory. And so it is. So I don't understand. You can't learn from here that wearing a gun is beautiful. You can learn that wearing shas is beautiful. Hey, man. Ein mikra yotzei midei pshuto. I mean, that's all very nice, but the pasuk has to mean what it's saying. I mean, the pasuk is referring on the pashut level to weapons, and it's saying you're beautiful with these weapons. So obviously they're decorative. To which Rav Kahana responded in the most incredible way. Oh my God, says he. I finished all of Shas when I was 18 years old, and I knew everything inside out, and I never knew Ein Mikra Yotzei Midei Pshuto. This is absolutely shocking. So I was 18 years old, Bar Tabani Yisrin, V'havi Gamirna Lelukula Shas, and lo ave yadana, dein mikra yotzim dein pshuto ad hasht. I just found out this is so fundamental. This changes everything. I used to think that you could actually learn Torah as metaphorical. Okay, fine. So now you know. And I said, I mean, like, who cares? What are you trying to tell us? So my kamash, well, okay, fine. So you never knew. No, you don't understand. You learn an incredible thing from here. Here is Rav Kahana that learned everything, right? And he didn't know this. Now, this is so fundamental. Oh, you tell me you learned everything. You don't know this? Yes, because what it shows is the Ligmar Inish Vahadar Lizbar. Obviously, he had these kashas for years. Who knows how many thousands of kashas he must have had, all of which are answered by this one simple yisod of Ein Mikra Yatsimidei Pshuto, right? So he had like every single Gemara and every single Braita and every single Medrash that would take a pasuk and would read it kipshat And he understood, but wait a minute, but the other Medrash says this. What does that mean? And how come nobody asks? It's like all of a sudden, everything adds up in his mind. So how could you go all of those years and not care about all of these problems? Because you're meant first to know all of the data and only then to start correlating. That's the point, which is an incredibly important idea, because it's the reason that nowadays nobody knows anything. They try to teach people a sugya instead of teaching them Kulei Shas and then teaching a sugya. So the Ligmar Inish Vahodar Lizbar, first get your facts straight. Don't worry about the problems. Then go back. Fine. Who cares how long it'll take? You'll never get to the end of anything. So at first, if you get all of the data, then you're ready to go as a fully armed human being in this sense of the Milchamta Shel Torah. Om Reb Yirmi, Om Reb Elazar. Now that we're talking about this war is a totally different kind of war than the competitive war that is meant to wipe out the other. And here it's exactly the opposite. Shnei Talmidei Chachamim HaMechadedim Zeh Ezeh BaHalacha. Two Talmidei Chachamim that are fighting all the time with each other, but their purpose in fighting is that each one wants to sharpen the other against himself and himself against the other. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matzliach Lehem. There HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them both tremendous Hatzlacha. Shelemer V'Hadarcha Tzlach. Continuing on with that beautiful Tehillim, that in your beauty, you will succeed. And one of the aspects of in your beauty is to be read at v'chadedcha, the sharpening effect that your beauty brings is going to bring you success. V'lo od ela sha'olim l'gdula, sh'namar tzlach rechav. You should succeed and ride on, silver girl. So that's the idea. Alon is carrying his clay milchama over there. Yes, indeed. It's very decorative. That means when you're carrying around your shas, it's going to have that tassel on it. Okay. So it says over here, succeed and ride on. So yokal afilo shelo lishma, you may think that if you've got some kind of ulterior motive in your learning, that this still would work. No. Tzlach urechav al dvar emet. You've got to be riding your beautiful steed of truth. And that, only that. You might think that if you have a sense of getting stuck up because you're always right, that would still work. Never. Talmud lomar va'anva tzedek. Your humility comes from what is real. V'imo sim came. If these two people do this together, then zochin l'teira shenitna b'yamin, then they achieve that very Torah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's right hand gave us. Shenemar v'torcha noraot yiminecha. So that from the Torah in your right hand, it will torcha. Torcha over here is used in the sense of it will Torah you up, meaning it will teach you. So it will teach you the most amazing things right out of the fact that you're learning together. Rav Nachum bar Yitzchak Amar, this is a different remez. The Torcha Noraot Yeminecha is referring to the awesome things that were promised that come together with Yemina Shel Torah. What is Yemina Shel Torah? The Omer Rav bar Rav Shilav Amar Lomer Rav Yosef bar Chama Rav Sheshes. My dichtiv Orech Yamin B'Yemina. So the Yemina Shel Torah holds long life. In the left hand, Torah holds the ideas of wealth and respect. Does that make sense? He asked. What are you telling me? That in the right hand, all you get is a long life, but you can't get any money? I mean, I don't know. Some people would prefer to get the money, you know, as we learned out from B'chol Mo'odecha by Kriyat Shema. So does that mean that? Of course not. I mean, it means, my meaning, ba, you get even Orech Yomi, Kol Sheken, you get Osher V'Kovet. All you get is some Osher V'Kovet, but you don't get Orech Yamim. There's two Pshatim in Rashi for the difference between Maiminimba and Masmilimba. One Pshat is, Maiminimba means exactly what it implies. A right hand, even on a left-handed person, which is called his right hand, so it's the same idea, the metaphor is the same. The right hand is the hand that is fully developed in terms of brain control. And therefore, if you're using your right hand, it means that you're able to deal with subtleties, the same way that a right hand is able to deal with subtle movements that your left hand is incapable of. So that if you learn the Torah the way you handle life with a right hand, that means that you're going to go into every subtle aspect and it's all going to be meaningful to you. If you use it the way you use your left hand, you know, you get around a little bit, so to speak, but don't try writing a Sefer Torah with it, right? So that's exactly the same idea. So you get an idea of Torah, but you lose all the subtleties. You lose all of these sensitivities that you're not going to have in a left hand. That's beautiful pshat. So that's Rashi's pshat in Maiminim in Mesmilim. And the other pshat is Maiminim would go somebody who puts his whole heart into it, which means that he's learning Torah Lishma, whereas Masmeilim, as we always say, that's the sinister. Who knows what kind of ulterior motives are in your nasty heart and so on. That's called Masmeilim. Omer Rabbi Yirmiyah, Omer Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, if you have Shnei Tamidei Chachamim, that they're so kind to each other, and they care about each other, and they're nochim zel zel halacha. Each one is open-minded to hearing what the other one has to say, and to be able to learn from the other one. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu makshiv lehem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu listens to them as they're learning. Because it's the beauty of the learning that is attracts HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shelemar oz nidberu yirei Hashem vayakshev Hashem vayishma. HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually pays close attention to them and listens to them and writes down their words. Says the Gemara, this lashon, what makes me say that we're talking about that are kind to each other? Where does it say that they're kind to each other? Because the idea over here, nidberu, is a very strange way of expressing talking to each other. So nidberu is a reference to something which is nachas, which means that you've accepted reality. Shenemar, yadber amim tachtenu. Now, any type of yadber, in which someone rules over something else, means that the other thing has given himself over completely to them. Another lashon over here is yadber, we find in the Gemara very often, is that if you're walking someone else, guiding someone else. So yadber also means that. So it could mean that each one has in mind the guidance and the care that they're putting into this relationship. And when it ends at the end of the pasuk, why does it say the idea of vayikatev b'sefer zikaron lefanav? HaKadosh Baruch Hu not only listens, but he puts it into his personal notebook, which is the notebook that he uses in Yerushalayim, Kol HaKotuv b'sefer lefanai. And there it says, who is that book for? Liyirei Hashem ulechoshvei shemo. People who have Yirah Shamayim and who think about him and who care about him. So what is choshvei shemo? Choshvei shemo means even if you were just thinking about it. So a person was thinking, was planning about how he's going to be able to do things. He wants to do a mitzvah. He wants to do something that is a maaseh that achieves things in the olam. And even if something happens and he's not successful, afilu chishev la'asot mitzvah v'ne'anaz v'lo asah, ma'ale alav ha'katuv ki'ilu asah. Kadosh Baruch Hu writes it down on the machshava, not on the achievement, which is not always in your hands to achieve. Omer Rav Chanina bar Idi, kol ha'oseh mitzvah kima'amara. If you do a mitzvah as it is said, in other words, no cheshbonos, no kind of agendas of your own, no explaining it the way you'd like it to be, but just because this is what it says I need to do, then ein mevasrim oto b'sorot ra'ot sheneemar shomer mitzvah. Shomer mitzvah means that you sit there and you guard and you care about it. You cherish it. That's the pshat of shomer. Then lo yeda davar ra. You'll never know anything that is bad. This was part of our discussion of the miluim and the idea of keeping the shivas yomim. So shomer mitzvah, if it's on its own terms, lo yeda davar ra. And of course, the mice of Nadav Aviyu never would have happened if there would have been pure shmiras hamitzvah kema'amara. Instead, you have a cheshbon. Well, let's make this drasha, and we'll figure it out on our own, and we'll make a big splash, and we'll do an extra job of bringing more eish and more keteris and so on. Nobody asked for that. Omer Rav Asi v'itema Rabbi Chanina. Afilu HaKadosh Baruch Hu gozer gezerah. Even if chas v'sholom, there's a terrible gezerah, this person, who is a shomer mitzvah, is able to be mavatal, and he tells Kivayochol, he tells HaKadosh Baruch Hu what he should do. Shenema ba'asher devar melach shilton, umi yomar lo matase. Listen, whatever a king decrees, that's it. That's the ultimate authority. There's nobody who could stand and say, no, 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 I disagree. And then the next pasuk is, Shomer mitzvah lo yedah davarah. So apparently a Shomer mitzvah can say, I disagree. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will have to accept his psak. Omer Baba, Omer Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Shnei Tamidei Chachamim, Hamakshivim ze leze bahalacha. Over here we have two people that need each other to understand. And they listen carefully to each other. HaKadosh Baruch Hu shomea lekolan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu listens. Shenema, hayoshvim baganim. Note again the issue over here, again, of its relationship to the way in which one sits in the ultimate garden. Over here, the ganim are a reference to Beis HaMedrash that is supposed to be a recreation of the Torah that's given in the Mishkan, which was called Yorad Dodi Legano, which was a recreation of the presence of the Shekhinah in Gan Eden. And this is, in fact, the interrelationship that if someone is zeichet to in Torah, then the love of the one that he's learning with is such that it's as if they're sitting in Gan Eden learning. So that's the ganim. So these people who sit in the ganim, they sit in the garden, and they're chaverim, they care about each other. They're makshivim, they're paying attention. He's listening carefully to the other person. There, HaKadosh Baruch says, let me hear your voice. L'kolecha shmi'ini, let me hear it too. But if they don't, im enosim kein, and instead their Torah becomes a competitive one-upmanship, then they're germin l'shchina shemistaleket mi'Yisrael. They cause HaKadosh Baruch to run away. Because the next pasuk says, brach dodi, my lover, run, run, get out of here. V'dome lecha letzvi. So that there's something that is doiche the shchina, and there's something that is encourages the shchina to be there with you. And that's the love and attention that is exists if someone is in the gun. Omer Rabba, Omer Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Shnei Talmidei Chachamim, Hamadgilim ze leze b'halacha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu ohavam, Shenema v'diglo alay ahava. If you gather together under a degel, which was the idea of the degolim, and you say, look, the world is a tough place. There's nobody out there who seems to understand anything, who can help us. Let's just get together, and between us, somehow or other, we're going to manage. We'll make each other. HaKadosh Baruch Hu falls in love with them, because it's those people who are dogel, that's what I love. Diglo alay ahava. But that means you can make your own way in the gun. Says Rava, yes, but not if you start from nothing. Because then you end up without the essential yesodos of your learning, and you end up being an idiot. You have to be in a position where you once at least were mekabel, the essential ideas from a Rebbe. So hu diyadei tzurata deshmaitata, the only time that this is true is where you already had learned sufficient that you know the general tzura, you have the general shape and a sense of how things make sense. But if you don't have that, then you can end up starting with a very small error on the yesodos. So the foundational level, the small error shoots you out into a few million mile mistake by the time you're at the level of where you're supposed to get to the moon, and you're lost in space. And that's basically why you need to be very careful. But even taking this risk of knowing Tzurata Deshmaitata and having someone that you love to be able to learn with is only good if let le rabba b'mata l'migmar minev. You don't have somebody that's available to teach you. So then you have a right to rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love of a diglo alay ahava. He'll help you not to get lost in space. But if you had an option to be able to be mekabel it, so then you should go and do that, not rely on this. Omer Rabba, Omer Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Godol ha'malve yoter min ha'oseh tzedakah. This goes back to our idea also. I mean, obviously, they're all maimorim of Rabba, Omer Rish Lakish, but that's not the point. The point over here is we were talking about kilo yechdal avyon mikerev ha'aretz, which meant that the interrelationship of human beings, not only in terms of competition, but in terms of care, which brings us to Torah learning together, and then in terms of caring for the poor, which brings us to this maimer. So if you lend money to someone, that is greater than giving him tzedakah, because it doesn't embarrass him. and it allows him to maintain his humanity while being able to survive and maybe get back on his feet. And the greatest thing that you could do for someone is provide him with capital. Matil bakis yoter mikulam. If you're able to put him into business, so you give him capital that he can work with, that's the greatest thing, because then you're giving him, note how connected this is to Tzurata Deshmaitata, then you're giving him a base upon which he can build. And that's the most important thing of all. Omer Baba, Omer Shimon ben Lakish, let me tell you something. You want to know who to hang around in life? If there's a Talmud Chacham that is an absolute bastard, I mean, the guy is so hard to get along with. He's no kein v'noter k'nachash. He's like living with a snake. You should take that Talmud Chacham, wrap him around your body if you can, because that's going to be the most important thing for you. And then you've got this wonderful, kind, sweet, caring guy who gives you all of the Werther every week when you walk into his store and he smiles at you and he's an Amoritz. But he's a chassid. It's gewaldig. Al tador b'shunato. Don't get near him. He's about to mess up your life in the end. Amazing. Omer of Kana, Omer of Shimon ben Lakish. V'amrilo Omer of Asi, Omer of Shimon ben Lakish. And some say it's Omer of Abba, Omer of Shimon ben Lakish. If you have a bad dog in your house, then you are going to end up being monea chesed mitoch beito. So the simple drasha that we learn over here, shenemar, lamas, now lamas we're understanding as an Attic Greek, means meire ehu chesed. By the way, there's a very important lesson over here for Moshe Forman and for the Rebbe, because this has to do with language. It doesn't say monea meire ehu chesed, right? It just says meire ehu chesed. And Rashi explains that the letter mem always means taking something from. So meire ehu would mean by definition monea meire ehu. Very, very beautiful. Okay. Because in Greek, in ancient Greek, a dog was a lomas. And Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak says, "Avporik b'menu yirat shamayim, shenemar v'yirat shaday ya'azov." You cause yourself in the wrong kind of relationship with animals, which is what the development of this parak comes from. You cause yourself ultimately to leave HaKadosh Baruch Hu's yira, because obviously the interrelationship that you have with your fellow human being has to be primary, and not something that is secondary to your love of your Rosh, what do they call those Rosh? Forget the name of the dog that goes around biting everyone in the neighborhood. Rothschwiler or something? Rothweiler, okay. It's got a nice German sound to it too, you know? So anyway, if you're going to have a dog and love a dog, make sure it's a dog that loves people and not chases them away. In fact, there was a woman who was going into somebody's house. Remember, once upon a time, this is actually fairly recent, where not everybody would have an oven in their house. And there was one person in the neighborhood, or a baker in the neighborhood, where you could use their oven. And so she asked permission to use this guy's oven. So she's going into his house to put her cake in an oven. And this guy has this big dog, Navach Bakalba. The dog sits there, jumps at her, and barks. She was pregnant, and she felt it's Akar Vlada. The fright was such that she felt she was gonna abort her fetus. So the owner says to her, "No, don't worry about him. He's a really nice dog." They always say that, right? "Don't worry about him. He's a really nice dog." This is as the blood's going down your leg. "Now, he's really a very nice dog. He's so nice that we had all of his canine teeth removed." And just to make sure he doesn't kill anybody. "And he's really great. We pulled out all of his claws, so don't worry about his clawing at you. So he's not going to do anything." So he says, "Shkile nive, shkile tufre." So she says to him, "Yeah, well, you can be shkile tufre. You took out his claws, you took out his teeth, you can take away your great chesed and trying to tell me everything's fine. It's too late. You can throw it out there on your thorn bushes that are also very pleasant. Kvar navlad, I can see, I've already lost this child." Then another mimer, Amr Avuna Maidichtiv. This is absolutely beautiful, because again, it relates the question of human development to the way in which early on in life you take for granted that all of the things that you are discovering are like the ultimate reality. You know, that old, I always talk about that nice little sign on the refrigerator. Hey, teenager, now's the time to move out when you know everything. You're going to get it all right. Don't hang around here. So here's a beautiful pasuk, which again interrelates the question of the Adam as a competitive slave of a Yetzer Hara versus Adam who is developing, but again, developing in the beautiful garden of the Torah that he's learning. So this is one of the most wonderful psukim in Kohelet. That Shlomo HaMelech writes, Smach bachur b'yaldotecha. You should love your childhood, boy. V'yativcha lipcha b'mei b'churotecha. Let your heart make you so happy during the time of your youth. Halech b'darkei lipcha b'mareinecha. Go whatever you like to do. Follow your eyes. But just know, v'da, ki al kol eile yaviyacha Elohim b'mishpat. But God is going to judge you on all of this. So what does that mean? Says Rav Huna, it must be that the first part of the pasuk that's telling you do whatever you want, have fun, don't worry about a thing, all of that comes from the Yetzer Hara. And then the last words are the warning of the Yetzer Tov. Hey boy, one day you're going to be paying for all of this, right? So that's the way to understand the pasuk as a dialogue, really. So da, ad kan Yetzer Hara, and then da, ki al kolela, that's the Yetzer Tov. Says Reish Lakish, that's not the way to understand the pasuk, that it's talking about two completely different points of view. It's an amazing pasuk. It's marvelous. The whole pasuk is holds together, but it's talking about Divrei Teira. So it's saying, enjoy it, man. Do whatever you think. You make up all of your pshatim. You write as many books as you want. You do everything and be convinced that your pshat is the real pshat and the only pshat and so on. And in the end, you will come out with a way to look at life that is uniquely your own and that you're ready to stand on. And you'll be 100% right, but know that you've got to put it into practice. And the more that you understand, the more it's going to demand of you to put into practice. So God's going to say, well, so you had a really nice time for the past 20, 30 years, huh? I don't see you doing any of these amazing pshatim that you came up with. Then you're going to pay. So maybe it would have been better not to come up with all those good pshatim. So that's what it's saying. Die, you should know. Mikan ve'elech lema'asim tovim. You got to put it into effect. You can't just sit there and learn about it. Okay, now getting on to the next part of the Mishnah where it says a birit. So first of all, a birit is Torah. So a birit being Torah implies that, which we understand, it is something that is meshamish another beged, and because of that, it's not a kli maaseh, and it cannot be mekabel tuma because a kli, and remember, this was the shorish of the entire interrelationship here, of Tuma and Shabbos. And here is like the first time the Mishnah, Mamish, puts the two together. A birit is Torah, and you can carry it on Shabbos. What? But again, as we've seen throughout, the concept of Tuma v'taira and the concepts of Shabbos are deeply interrelated because both of them are the getter of Meleches Machsheves. Both of them come only because of the human connection, so that it's human consciousness that turns something into a kli. Otherwise, it's not a kli. It's just what is. It's just random. So the fact that something is made or that something is taken by a human and set aside to be used as a kli changes the level of information in that thing, which allows it to become tame. And it's because of that that only things that relate to human can be tame. There's no such concept as tame in a natural state. Now, because of that, we have all of the inyanim of Meleches Machsheves associated with the dinim of Tuma in very profound ways. And we've seen that in many, many areas, they actually do go together. We discovered the question this week about what you're going to learn out Shabbos from Tuma all over. Obviously, sometimes we're concerned which maybe she'll take it off and show it. What does that have to do with Tuma? Okay, so over here, let's try to understand what article of clothing is something that is not used directly by the person, but is used for something that the person uses. Now, Rav Yehuda says something weird, because he says a birit is an etz adah. Usually an etz adah refers to a bracelet. Masir Rav Yosef, how can you say it's an etz adah? That's against the pasuk. Birit, in the Mishnah, it says, is Torah. V'yotzei Baba Shabbat. Now, if you take a look at the Klei Midyan, one of the things that it lists over there that requires a mikveh, it says Beferish Etzadah. They brought all of these things from the people that they had captured in Midyan, and Etzadah is listed there. No, he didn't mean it's an etzak. He meant that a birit on a leg is the equivalent of an etzadah on an arm. That's the point. In other words, in the same way that you wear a bracelet around your arm, you wear an etzadah around your leg to hold up your stockings. So he's saying it's the same kind of thing. It's a bracelet that goes around the sock and keeps it in place. Yosef, Rav, and Ravuna come in the Rabbi Yirmiyah. So Rav and Ravuna were Talmidim, and they were sitting in front of Rabbi. This is not the regular Ravuna, by the way. This is apparently a Ravuna was a Talmid of Rabbi Yirmiyah. And Rabbi Yirmiyah was taking a little nap. You know, he had fallen asleep in his chair. And as you're supposed to do when the Rebbe is asleep, as the Rebbe shloved. As the Rebbe shloved. He doesn't even appear. So this is what happened to Rabbi Yirmiyah. So he was shluffing, and Ravina and Ravuna, they were talking about the sugya over here, and Ravina says this birit is only worn on one leg. So maybe it's for pantyhose, and it holds up the whole thing with one leg, I don't know. Kvalim are worn on both legs, so because of that, the kvalim are a problem, for some reason. That has to be made clear. So says Ravuna, absolutely not. Obviously, the kvalim are worn on two legs, so there, we'll see what they are, but the garter belt on one leg doesn't make any sense. Of course, it's on both legs. They affect both legs. The idea over here is that if you've got two kvalim, so you have two garters, if you put a chain between them and connect them with a let's say, a golden chain, a silver chain, then they become kvalim, and then it's a problem on Shabbos because you could take out the kvalim, and somehow or other adding the chain between them makes it roy to be mekabel tuma. How is that? What, and a chain makes them roy to be mekabel tuma? How would that be? And don't try to tell me that the reason it's mekabel tuma is because a chain makes noise when you're walking, and therefore it's called a musical instrument, and therefore it would be mekabel tuma like Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeni that we had before, the Omer Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Omer Rav Yochanan, minayin lamashmiya kol b'kli batachot shutameh. How do we know that metallic sounding units are also considered to be tame? Because it's called davar asher yavo be'esh, remember, in the Klei Midyan, afilu dibur, even things that make sounds can become tame. So maybe that's why, I mean, come on, Bishlamahat, and we're talking over there where you made it for the sound, like the case of where we had the bell that was supposed to identify where a cow is or whatever. That's Kaboyle Lakola, and it's Kavid Maisa. You want it for the sound, and it's creating the sound. That is a Kli Maaseh. That's the Chiddush of the Pasuk, that creation of sound is considered to be a human Kli. Okay, but over here, I mean, you're not making those chains in order that she should sound like a dead man walking, right? So it's certainly not to turn her into a ghost. So what is the purpose of making these kivolim? No, you don't understand. That's not what it's for. Hachinami ka'avid maisa. It's for adjusting the footsteps. How wide is her stride? So for a girl to have a wide stride is dangerous because it wears out her hymen. So as she walks, keeps stretching the membranes, then she's going to end up without betulim. And since families like their kids to be able to be clearly virgins, so because of that, they didn't like them to be walking around with wide strides. And that's why women never rode bicycles. Because of that, they would put on these chains, not on the bicycle, but on the girl. And therefore, Mishpacha, like Rabbi Bar Bachanan, Rabbi Yochanan says, that Mishpacha Achat Aita Birushalayim. Oh, I forgot to tell you that Rabbi Yirmiyah got up in the middle of the discussion. I skipped that part. And he said, yep, that's exactly what Rabbi Yochanan said. Anyway, so there was this family in Yerushalayim that had these very wide strides. And Hayu Betulotayim Noshrot, they would always lose their betulim. By the time they were ready to be married, they didn't have any betulim. Asulam Kivalim, so they made these garters for their stocks, and they put these pretty chains between them so that they would control the Psiotayim. And then Lo Hayu Betulayim Noshrot, and that was much better. So sure enough, Rabbi Yirmiyahu wakes up and he says, fantastic, I see the two of you finally worked it out, huh? That's exactly what Rabbi Yochanan said. Beautifully done, he says to Rabbi Ravuna. He also Rav Dimi Amr Rabbi Yochanan. When Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he quoted Rabbi Yochanan apparently wrongly, as we're going to see. And he said that Rabbi Yochanan said, how do we know that something that is oruk, something that's woven, is mekabel tuma? If it's decorative, no matter what size it is, you do not need to have shalosh al shalosh. We know that from the tzitz. Because the tzitz was only shtei etzbaot, wasn't sholosh, and you see that it's considered to be tomei. I'm like, Abai, what are you talking about? A tzitz, what does that have to do with a woven thing? A tzitz is made out of gold. It was a tatz shel zahav. You're going to learn out from a tatz shel zahav that's considered to be choshev among the big day kuhuna. You're going to learn out that something woven of that size, you can't do that. That was kamin tasher v'rochav shtei atzbaot mukav meozen laozen. This is the same lotion that we had before about the women's decoration. It went from one ear to the other across his forehead, and there were two rows of writing on it. It said the Shem Hashem Yudkei Vavkei on the top, and underneath it said Kodesh La. So it was Kodesh La Hashem. You would go from the bottom to the top. Rashi learns that one was on top of the other because you don't want to have anything that is put above the level of the shame. Tosfos learns that that's true, but then it doesn't read properly. So how can it say Kodesh LaShem if you're reading top going down? Therefore, Tosfos understands that the two lines were offset. Kodesh La, and then you move up, Yud Kei Vav Kei on the next line, but the Kodesh La comes before. Right? So it's not two lines, but they're offset from each other. Okay, there are other pshatim as well, but those are the two main pshatim that we have over here. And when Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi heard this, remember Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi was the one who had that incredible story where this mazik, the shade, helped him out, the Ben Talmulius, and he made Caesar's daughter insane, and she was cured by Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi, and then Caesar was so grateful, he said, go into the storage houses in the Vatican and take out anything you want. Anyway, so he did a whole tour of the Vatican at the time, so Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi says, well, when I was in Rome, I actually saw the tzitz, and it said Kodesh LaHashem in one line, like every idiot thinks. I don't know where you get this idea. And of course, obviously, they had a Kabbalah that was done in two different lines. Not that it would be Ma'akev anyway, so they may have made one like that at one point. Kisolak Rav Dimi Larda, so then Rav Dimi, who had quoted Rabbi Yochanan as saying that this is true of anything that is Orug, and Abaye was outraged. He said, how can you bring a riot from the tzitz to a dover that's Orug? So when Rav Dimi went to Narda, where the whole sugya had originally been said, he sent back a telegram, and he said, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Dvarim sha'amarti lechem ta'utem bi'adi, that's not what Rabbi Yochanan said. What they're quoting Rabbi Yochanan in the yeshiva is like this. Kacham Ramishem Rabbi Yochanan, how do we know that a tachshit koshu? It doesn't matter how big a decorative item is. Because like this, we're used to our shiurim, you know, of what's the size of a beged that's made out of tzemru pishtim, what's the size of a beged that's made out of sack, and so on and so forth. So you would think that the same thing is true of a decoration, that there's some type of minimal size that is going to be mechayev you. Maybe it should be the same size as the shalosh al-shalosh. But that's not true, because we see from the tzitz that it was really very small, and nonetheless, it's considered to be a beged, then it's therefore shayach l'tuma. And then he said separately, and I got it mixed up, and I actually put the two together, that he also said, how do we know that an orig kolshehu would be mekabel tuma? So how do we know that something that actually is going to be mekabel tuma of any size if it serves a particular purpose of beged? We learn that out from the extra word o that appears in the list of the kelim that are mekabel tuma, and we'll see that it appears twice, once legabe sheretz, and once legabe tumas meis, and it says, O beged, tana rabbanan, orig koshu tamei, indeed the Braisa says, exactly what Rabbi Yochanan was now quoted as saying, an orig of any size can be mekabel tuma. a takshit of any size could be makabel tumah. And there's even a bigger chumrah when it comes to things that are made out of sack. And normally sack is like the most kal thing. If you're actually talking about a piece of sackcloth over there, it needs to be a very big size, 4x4 tefachim. There we're talking about etzba'ot. So in one way, sack is also more chomor, and you can get an even smaller piece made of sack to be metam. I think Mar is going to explain this in a moment, how that could be. And over there, at times, a piece of loose sack will be metame as if it were truly oruk. Omar Rava. Okay, let me go through this, says Rava, because I can bring a riot to each one of these things, okay? Because I learned from Rabbi Yochanan, basically Rabbi Yochanan said, oruk koshu is tame, that I know from the pasuk. Obeget. Okay, we said that before. Takshit kol koshu tame, that I also learned out from tzitz. If something is both orig and a takshit, so it's mixed, some of it is made like cases we had earlier where you have like costume jewelry and so on, that would also be tame from mikol clay masa. So anything that you made into something, this was also by clay midyan, anything that had been made into jewelry by them, but wait a minute, you can't learn out from there that it's mekabel tumah. That was said by clay midyan, and clay midyan are only referring to things that are mekabel tumah's mace, because that was in the middle of the war, and over there it goes through the whole thing about the paraduma, and that was, how can you learn out from a tumah that is so chomer, which is tumah's mace, that it's mekabel tumah as a kli, which would mean it would be mekabel tumah from any avatumah, including even sheretz. Who's to say? Omar Lei, so Rava said to him, because I know it from Exera Shava. In both cases, it uses the word kli, ko kli asher yeasa melacha b'hem, which we also have by Sheret. So we learned that out from the kol kli that I learned out before from Midyan. I would like to just say over what was meant by the last piece of the braisa, that Musaf sakala beget shtamim shum ori. How could it be that something is made from sack? What do you mean, as if it's oruk? Isn't something made from sack oruk? Isn't sackcloth oruk? It's just a very kind of wide and rough weave, but it's still a weave, isn't it? So why all of a sudden would it be different than the din of the oruk that we had before? Oh, too. I mean, every beget is an oruk. So we're saying, oh, a sack is matami mishum oruk. And what? And wool is not matami mishum oruk. What are you supposed to mean? A beged is not oreg? No. What we were saying is that a something made out of just sack, that is to say goat hair, could be even more mekabel tumah than a beged, because a beged needs to be actually woven. And a goat's hair does not need to be actually woven. It could just be braided. And that would be enough. Why is it enough? What in the world do you do with a braid of thread that's made out of goat hair? Omar Rabbi Yochanan, because a poor man will take three of these thick strands, which would be meaningless to make one of those Kever Rochel red bands with. I mean, you can't make it out of three threads, right? But if you're using sack, which is very, very thick, then a thread that's made out of sack, if you twist three threads, that is very significant. And that a poor man will use as the equivalent of a decorative necklace around his poor, meaning poor literally, his poor daughter's neck. So it gives her a little bit, you know, he'll dye it maybe and make her feel good that she's got something around her neck too. Whereas he couldn't do that just using threads that are made out of tzemer or pishtim. They're those so thin, they wouldn't make any kind of impact. And to buy a real one, he can't afford. So therefore, what he uses is sack.